Hey, what's going on, everybody? And welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast presented by Underdog Fantasy. I'm Vlad Sedler at RotoGut. With me, as always, is Booms himself, Mr. Jason Anthony at Booms62. We're recording on Tuesday night, April the 30th, right on the eve of the new month of the season in May. Jason, you're back in town. How is life? How is baseball? How's everything?
What up, Vlad? It's nice to be back in my own bed. It's amazing how behind you feel when you're kind of a little busy, not looking at baseball every day. So you're trying to catch up, doing fab, lineups, who's hot, who's not. But is it me or does it feel like we're in the third month of the season already? It's a grind. And we're only, what, 5-6 weeks in. So we got a long ways to go. But man, it's been a long season already, but it's fun.
It's wild. We talk about it every week. The amount of injuries that are piling up. Some of these guys are already starting to come back. We know that Jake Berger, for example, coming back from his oblique injury. Nick Pivetta, Justin Steele should be returning sometime soon. But such an absolute war of attrition. But here we are. We are entering the month of May. And of course, the biggest news of the early part of this week is Mike Trout. Torn meniscus in his left knee. He is going to be out for a bit. It doesn't seem like it's going to be a 60-day thing, but you never know. And so, unfortunately, this nice little story has been temporarily paused. I think the lower body injuries were always an issue. And for me, I mean, I don't have a lot of Mike Trout. I wanted Mike Trout. I didn't get him. But I mean, outside of a little, like, you know, a little fun, like, I'm not going out there. There's nothing to say. There really isn't much to say, like, because you feel bad for people. You think of all the people that were so invested and are happy about it. And there's no reason, I don't think, to, like, kind of pile up on other people's remorse. Not even remorse, just, like, sadness. I mean, it sucks. It's a really big deal losing somebody like that who was especially, you know, stealing bases, hitting homers, doing everything. So this sucks. Man, the victory lap and I don't love it.
No, it's a bad look. But, you know, I was a full fade on Trout entering the year, and I was completely regretting it, having some serious FOMO. One of the reasons I was a fade is based on the injury history. That being said, my God, having no Mike Trout is bad for baseball. We need Mike Trout, especially a healthy Mike Trout who was 10 homers. He was stealing bases. I think he had more steals already this year than he had the last couple of years combined. I mean, it's we want the best players on the field. I mean, this is a game we love. That's why we play it. It's not just to win or lose. It's because we like baseball. We love baseball. And Mike Trout on the injury list is not good for baseball.
And it's not a horrendous offense. Like, they really haven't necessarily hit their stride. But even last season, without Trout for a good chunk of it, without Taylor Ward for a good chunk of it, they still hit over 200 home runs. They were top 10. And power, and obviously overall just a disappointment. The pitching staff was horrendous. But the team isn't horrible. They're obviously not really like a playoff type contender. And of course that changes even more so with no Trout, but it also, it stymies the eventual trade interest that may have occurred. And of course this may be nothing. He's back say in July, maybe earlier, hopefully before the All-Star break. And, gets going before the All-Star break and still can get traded, but this definitely slows things down a little bit. And just in general, man, this team, again, these are guys that don't matter as much for fantasy, but Chase Silseth, he has been now moved to the 60-day DL. Michael Stefanich, who was just called up from the minors as an extra bat, he's out on the 60-day IL as well with a quad injury. Miguel Sano is dealing with, I believe, a knee. He's been out for 4 straight days. And so the team, with all these things happening, they called up, by the way, they called up Amir Garrett. Remember him in the good old Reds days. And they added a guy who couldn't even stay on the White Sox. And that's actual LA native. Of course, this is Anaheim, but LA native, Kevin Pillar. So now they got Pillar, they got Garrett, and it's just kind of a different configuration now.
Yeah, reusing guys that got cut from the White Sox and the Giants bullpen is probably not a good look for the Angels. But like you said, they're not a great team. you know, for every injury, there's an opportunity that exists. And, you know, I think we need to touch on the lightning rod from this weekend. That is Joe Adell. The bids were shockingly big from what I had projected. I was talking to Scott Ginstad and, you know, we're talking, you know, what do you think for Fab? And I was in the 30s. I moved it up to the 50s after talking to him, and he's triple digits. I wasn't close. Man, but him running, he has cut down the strikeout rate. Yeah, he looks like he might fulfill some of the prospect promise that he's had, but it's a small sample size. Still striking out, so we'll see. But this Mike Trout being injured should give him a pretty long leash to figure it out or not.
Yeah, I had a little commentary on Sunday because I just missed it entirely. Like, I just, he had been on the bid list very low, but for a couple of weeks. And I'm just kind of in my zone. I'm in my bubble. I'm just like, you know, working my butt off over the weekend, just like setting all the bids, constantly changing things, updating. And I didn't comprehend it and grasp it. And this goes back to a conversation we had a couple of weeks ago about, you know, maybe getting out of my little bubble a little bit, do allow myself to be a little bit of, it's not influence. It's more like have a pulse on the market so that I'm not sort of shell shocked, like something like that. And the main reason is because I want to give my, our subscribers the best, you know, the best analysis, the best bid ranges. So if I'm way low on Adell, that was a straight miss. That wasn't because, you know, I didn't think he was going to be good. I just didn't anticipate him going for that much.
Double down. I love it. You know, like the only thing we do control as fantasy players is watching our closer. They're always going to blow the save if we watch them. So we're not superstitious at all. But I think your reaction and mine too, when I opened up the Fab bibs, was more sticker shock. When you see the triple digit bids on a player like that, who I know, you know, I was interested in, and again, I was $50, $60, $70 off, sometimes $100 off on bids, and it was somebody I wanted. So it's usually, I'm shocked that I was that far out of the ballpark. I like to take pride in being competitive in bids that I would like to get, and I was not close there.
Well, now the fun part is going to be a lot of leagues where, I mean, I don't know what everyone has spent, right? I mean, there are people out there with $800, $900 left still. People with $300 to $400, and then for the most part, everybody's in between. Right now, I've now engaged in savings mode. Like, I'm really looking at those conditional bids that I'm placing, and I'm not going too high. Like, if I have an outfielder list, like if you remember this past weekend, it was deep. Even in 15 teamers, there were at least 10 guys I would have been happy with. And you know, even somebody like Jesus Sanchez, really loved him this week. I didn't really feel a need to go much higher. Like, I had my bid range, forgot what it was, like 10 to 25 in 15 teamers, like 5 to 12 in 12s. And I stayed within that and I got them for the most part. But this is one of those weeks where, you know, even the players that I would typically bid even $5, $8 just to make sure I got them, if they were my fifth or sixth conditional at this point, I'm just putting a dollar. Like, if I'm happy with them and I can grab them, if I really want them, maybe I'll go an extra buck. But I'm really into that savings mode because you end up with a lot of good deals. Like, a lot of the best players, a lot of our best pickups, when we review them at the end of the season, were the ones we weren't fully expecting that we just grabbed for a couple dollars.
Yeah, getting in a week early on a guy and paying $2 instead of paying $102 changes your season dramatically. So it's a little luck, a lot of skill, and it's a nice combination of getting the guy at the right time. So it's, like you said, money saving mode. Speaking of that, I do need to give a shout out to my partner, Matt Modica. He's really working hard at not spending all of our money this year in our Fab League. So we're actually in the high 600s as far as our Fab, which is really an improvement for us. So I'm proud of him and being a little more restrained. So we'll see if we can continue that.
Yeah, it's going to make a big difference, especially we say this every year, like in a season like this, but it just, I don't know the math behind it. I don't know the numbers, but we can just, you just feel it. I mean, if it's every week and it's several guys and it really stings, but the good thing is there feels like there's more of an abundance of those secondary guys, like even pitchers. There are always some pitchers that we can pick up. Like, I remember towards the end of this weekend, I was starting to look into Bryce Wilson, who I added in the Sunday update. I'm like, you know, I don't I don't mind him. This can actually work out okay. We saw Jake Irvin had a good first start out of his two-step. Ryan Feltner against the absolute worst team in baseball right now, the Miami Marlins. He pitched an absolute gem. They somehow lost that game. That's crazy.
It is amazing. And it changes so rapidly. I mean, I was shocked. I got Bryce Elder allotted 15 teams leagues for, I think I bid $17. I know his skill set is not sexy and he's not great, but I think he had 17 wins last year, and the Braves are still, you know, they haven't performed great this year, but he's still going to get a lot of wins if he stays up, and it looks like he's going to have an opportunity. So I was a little surprised by the lack of love for an arm that's going to be in that rotation, it seems like to me. You know, even as your starting pitcher number 9 or 10 on your fantasy roster, he's pretty valuable in my opinion.
Yeah, and that was an opportunity there for anyone that liked Elder for the fact that he had at Dodgers on the schedule, and that's really what kept this price down, because a lot of us are looking like, what can you do? You know, we're streaming these guys. I understand he's on Atlanta. He kind of really faltered down the stretch last season, but you know, he's a pitcher on the Braves. He's going to have some good luck too, and at some point the Braves are going to get going. Like, all these guys that are absolutely struggling, Acuna is technically, he's stealing bases, but he's not hitting for power, is not doing much else. Albies have been out for a while. Matt Olson and Austin Riley have been horrendous. I'm not worried about those guys. They're not going to do maybe what they did last year, but I mean, Austin Riley's hitting like .223 right now. Olson's only got a couple of homers or whatever it is. Like, those are the guys in trade leagues that I'm going for. Like, you grab these Atlanta Braves before they really get going, and the schedule will open up, right? At some point here, they're gonna get the Dodgers and you know, the Mets and some decent pitching. Then it opens up. They'll face the Cubs, Pirates, Nationals, A's, Washington again, Detroit. It really opens up for them, so I'm not too worried about these Braves.
Yeah, and what we go through every year in fantasy is the March, April colder temperatures tend to limit hitting. And then you get in the heat of the summer, especially on the East Coast, the ball just flies out. So I'm not worried about these hitters. Take advantage of the pitching while you can, because we all know in the summertime, it gets pretty ugly pretty quick.
And then as far as these three prospects that have been called up, do you have a strong opinion on any of them between Tyler Black of the Milwaukee Brewers, Jordan Beck called up for the Rockies, and Joey Loperfido for the Houston Astros? By the way, Jose Abreu sent down to minor league camp. So any strong takes on any of these guys?
Who knew Jose Abreu had any minor league options left at that age? It's pretty fascinating.
Incredible.
out of the three, Tyler Black is the one I'm interested in. I know he was getting some draft love early. I think it was kind of mid-February, early March. They thought he was going to make the team. So he was getting drafted. He was actually available a couple of my leagues. No main events because the mains hadn't drafted yet. But he, with the speed, the power, I think he could be usable. With these prospects, it's a careful what you wish for, because it was what Jonathan Clase on the Mariners, we're all excited to get him. And what do you get? 5 at bats. Heston Kerstad on the Orioles, 5 at bats. There's no guarantee these players are going to come up and play every day. Loperfido seems like he's got a pretty good opportunity in front of him, and he was just mashing in the minors. I need to do some more research on him. And your point on our outline is perfect. I mean, all the bids will be, what have you done for me lately? So we have a whole week of data coming up, how much playing time, how much production, and that's going to drive the bid price.
Yeah. Loperfido he's going to be pegged for some, I think there's a playing time opportunity here. This is a guy that, first of all, I know Eric Cross, our guy at FTN, loves him. So that's one thing. And he had a 3% strikeout rate in the minors in AAA last season. But again, he only played, I think, about 30 games. He was called up from AA late in the summer. But the guy had 25 homers, 25 stolen bases. That was last season between double and triple A. So far this year, again, similar thing, high walk rate, high strikeout rate. bunch of home runs, was leading the minors at that point, and chips in a few steals. And he walks into a situation here in Houston where, you know, at some point, I mean, it appears that Jose Abreu is toast, but from what I understand, Loper Fido's not just going to come and just take over first base. He's going to play a little first. He's going to play a little outfield. I think Mauricio Dubon out there and Jake Myers are just guys. I think they're both actually decent defensively, if I'm not mistaken, but you know, those are bottom of the order bats. And so, and then you got Chaz McCormick, who's actually a little dinged up. So I think there's an opportunity here for him. He hit seventh and I believe had an RBI double in one of his first at bats there. So I think he's going to stick around. I think if he hits a home run or two this weekend, it's going to be something. He just missed that Mexico City series. That would have been something. I don't know that much about Jordan Beck. I defer to the prospect guys there, but obviously, you know, somebody in Colorado, but you never trust prospects in Colorado. I think that's kind of a thing. Anyone bidding on Hunter Goodman or Sean Bouchard over the last couple of weeks, you just can't time this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Whoever would have thought that the Astros needed a young kid to come up and infuse some offense in that team, entering the year, we were all pegging them as just another juggernaut, and their team has very much been underwhelming. Jordan's still a beast, but Bregman's been bad. Altuve's been good. But overall, they need some more depth in that lineup, and Loper Fido could theoretically stick and get a long leash if he hits when he's up. So I think you're right on the money on that.
I think I was the only person in the entire NFBC Online Championships to have drafted Tyler Black, actually. It was my first or second OC. It was early February, and it was when I actually thought he had a good chance of making the team. And this, is, I believe, is before the Corbin Burns trade that brought Joey Ortiz over. And so, I don't know, just you're looking at a roster with guys like Owen Miller, Andrew Monastario. Like, I just did not see how Tyler Black, you know, unless he had a horrific camp, wasn't going to make the team. And then the deal was made. Joey Ortiz came over. And then at some point, Oliver Dunn, as you mentioned, he's done. That became a thing. But Ortiz is very inconsistent. He's not a very, you know, not a really a top prospect or anything. He's not really a difference-making bat. Tyler Black, on the other hand, is. This is a guy that swiped, what was it, 55, 56 in the minors last year, again, between double and triple A. A very close ratio there between his walks and strikeouts. He's got a little bit of power as well. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he even gets like the Sal Frelick from Craig Counsell treatment last year. Remember, Sal Frelick, I think, hit like fourth or fifth in like his very first game in his major league debut. I think it was like fifth and moved up to fourth. So Tyler Black, I could see him kind of like, I mean, you get him in the lineup there. So I like him. I do like him the most, and we'll see how it goes there with the playing time for him.
Yeah, and the manager just came out today and actually said he's going to play first base and DH. So that could be
Hoskins got hurt.
Yeah, no, Hoskins was playing today. He was part of that mini brawl.
That's why he got
pulled. So I don't know. Yeah, exactly. What the manager's thinking, but it didn't sound like he was going to play third base. So first base, maybe some DH. So it'll be interesting how they fit him in if it's not third base.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. Again, I think a lot of these prospects, their prices are going to be driven by their playing time, where they're hitting the order and what they're going to do. So if anyone goes off on the weekend, it's just going to bump the price even more. Anyone else on our list here you want to touch on before we kind of get into our main topic?
Yeah, I actually had a question for you. I always seem to end up on closers, but just a couple points to touch on. Johan Duran back today, gets first save, jumps right in. Thanks for the memories, Griffin Jacks. We'll see you later. Craig Kimbrell, what to do with him, back in performance issues. I know people spent a lot of money on Cano this weekend in Fab. But Brandon Hyde just came out and said that he hopes Kimbrell's available to pitch on Wednesday. So that could be interesting. And you put out an interesting tweet on Michael Kopech about your 15 team leagues, I think you did last week. You know, with a team as bad as the White Sox, they keep using him in the eighth and hope he gets to two innings. What to do with him? Because I have a Kopech in a lot of places. I love the arm, hate the team, hate the usage. So what are you doing with him? What do you recommend?
Oh, yeah. So I think the tweet was from the weekend, and it was like, I'd rather not get saves than carry Michael Kopech on my team. But actually where I have him is on my OCs, and it's actually a very a comfortable position because he's like my, I mean, it's a little obnoxious, to be honest. He's like my fourth closer, and he just sits on my bench. And that's kind of a thing that I do. I must have been, I must have been closerless as a young, child or teen. But I just like to hoard the closers. And I know that's not as necessary in a 12. Or I feel like if you're in a 12 teamer, if you think about it, if you have a couple of good closers and you lucked in on a Yates or you got a Finnick and whoever, you have two guys that are dependable. It's really hard. There's not a lot of justification to play Michael Kopech because he does more damage than good for the most part. And again, on Tuesday night, there he goes, gives up another run. And I don't know if that's worth a couple extra Ks or, another extra, two thirds of an inning or whatever. And for a team that they're playing a little over their heads, like they're competing here in these games against a really bad Twins, for example. And they're just not good. They're not going to win a lot of games. And so, and maybe the situation changes there. Maybe, Jordan Leisure starts to play a little bit more. They've got some arm. I mean, they could change the situation there altogether. So I don't know. 15 teamers, it's a little tough. I don't think you can just outright drop them, but I think in 12s, most 12 teamers, I feel like there's always somebody on the come that you can pick up, that you don't have to be in a situation where you even have to start Kopech.
Yeah, you can never have too many saves, even in the 12s, because as soon as you think you're set, you're going to need to fab some. So it's not bad to hoard them. Last thing for me before we actually jump into the pitching conversation, we do have some pitching help on the way. We've been hit with injury after injury, bad news after bad news, but it sure seems like there's some reinforcements on the way. And obviously this can all change quickly, but Yu Darvish pitched tonight. He actually looked good. Nick Pivetta is coming back. Walker Buehler should be back next week. Brian Wu's doing rehab starts. Kyle Bradish is pitching this week. John Means is coming back. Taj Bradley's in a rehab. Ryan Nelson's coming back. Blake Snell's throwing right now. Justin Steele's coming back. Braxton Garrett should be back next week. And then Max Scherzer as well. So that's a lot of really strong arms to kind of reinvigorate a lot of teams. I know I have one team that's doing decent, and I have Buehler and Steele kind of sitting there in the wings, and basically adding two SP3s to that roster will be a huge invigoration to the roster. So I'm excited mm-hmm. about that, but there's probably another injury coming to kind of take my excitement away, but we shall see.
And it may not be on your team, but there will be more injuries for all these guys that are coming back. A couple will have setbacks. Like, for example, Max Scherzer just had one with thumb soreness. There will be some more of this, and there will be more attrition among more starting pitchers. But that is one of the things that we're going to dive into. Before we do, I want to ask you, if you want to make money making picks on MLB games, then you have to try Underdog Fantasy. It's the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em games, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they'll go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. You pick 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code FTN, and Underdog will double your first deposit to $100. So you have time, bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's underdogfantasy.com on Underdog Fantasy app in the App Store. Sign up with the promo code FTN and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and in Nebraska, 21 and over in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. And in Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789. And by the way, the Underdog Football rooms have now opened and people are going berserker. And apparently they're, I don't know if you've seen it, the BBM4, now that the NFL draft has occurred, they've kind of changed things a little bit where like the top 40 overall are all in position to win, like over, you know, the top prize is still 1.5 million, but they've spread it out instead of making like first this giant $4-5 million prize. First place is now 1.5, and then like second gets right around a million or under that. And there's like massive life-changing money for many of us, prizes up through like the top 50 or 100. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to check that out. Nothing like the NFL draft happening to kind of get the football juices flowing, but gotta stay focused on baseball. There's plenty of time later to do some football.
Yeah, and by the way, this is my promise. I mean, of course, football is also part of what I do, but I am, man, we're going to the wire, like to the day. Like, you're going to see less football tweets from me during football season, less draft boards and things like that. I'm not trying to like reverse things here, but like, baseball is my true love. It's my sport, my passion, my fantasy. And so when, you know, it's really hard to be fully all in on one sport, and then because you're always giving up a little bit on another one, right?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Mason Miller just struck out the side again. Surprising. My God, that guy is just dominant right now. Just stay healthy, bud.
He's incredible. So today we're going to have some fun. I did something earlier today that just I got kind of carried away with, and this is in regards to something I've been sort of preaching about with rankings, where I'm very much opposed to rest of season rankings. Like, to me, in baseball, asking to rank this player versus that player for the rest of the season, it's a hard game, and I feel like a lot of it is just it's guessing. There's more guessing than it is like a strong assumption, because there's injury. Obviously, you don't know when injury can strike. We don't know. You know, nobody's memorized the schedule. You don't know where guys are going to hit in the lineup. Managers are moving guys up and down more often than not. So it's really hard to answer these, to answer honestly, a rest of the season question. So we've talked about it before in the show. We're looking at these in kind of 2-week increments. What can you do for me in the short term if it's a streamer who has potential staying power, rest of the season vibes? But what we're doing here, and what I did earlier today, is I went through the top 60 starting pitchers and I mapped out their schedules just for the month of May. And granted, some of that's going to change. There are going to be pitchers that, you know, they're one day and they're moved up. Like Aaron Nolan was moved up a couple of days in the rotation. So now his projected matchups now change for the next month. And so there's still, of course, that there's injuries, rain out possibilities. But what I did was I created a grid and ranked based on strength of schedule and just, you know, mapping out each week's matchups and color coding them for, you know, strong starts versus potential warnings. And so it's something that'll be out on the site on FTN Fantasy on Wednesday, but I did share it with you, Jason, earlier. I know you had a look at it and thought it would make for a fun discussion, looking at how some of the surprise pitchers and top performers in the month of April and what we might expect for in May.
Yeah, you know, like we talked about, we're 6 weeks in, but this is 6 weeks of great performance from a lot of these guys. And it's interesting looking at the spreadsheet, you know, the top 19, top 20, how many guys are past 300 ADP on here? With Ranger Suarez, Tanner Houck, Blanco, Spencer Turnbull, Cody Bradford, and then Seth Lugo's 260. So, you know, almost, you know, a third of the top 20 is basically after round 20 in our 15 team leagues. It's pretty amazing. And we know that doesn't last over the course of a season. Actually, we can talk a month from now and this is going to look completely different, but it's sure an interesting start. And I don't know how Phil does it, but he was all in on Ranger Suarez and he somehow got him to be the new Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And I got to, you have to give credit where credit is due. And like, dude, that's amazing. Like Ranger Suarez through the first 5 weeks of the season, almost whatever it is, five, six starts, is the best pitcher in baseball. He's the only one just looking at, you know, you can look at the Razzball player rater. I'm looking right now at the Fangraphs player rater. He's the only one that's earned over $40 per their 5x5 formula in 12 teamers. That's pretty dang impressive. The closest person to him is Tariq Skubal. And that's not even within 10 bucks. It's like Ranger Suarez is your top guy. Then you got Skubal, Tyler Glasnow on the Dodgers, Shota Imanaga on the Cubs. Then you got Tanner Houck. You got back-to-back Mariners, and they're not named Luis Castillo or George Kirby. It's actually Logan Gilbert and Bryce Miller. And you've got four Phillies in the top 20, four Philly pitchers. You got Zach Wheeler there, Spencer Turnbull, and Ranger Suarez, of course, at the top, and then Aaron Nola closing out the top 20. I know Jack Flaherty has obviously moved up a bit, and Cole Reagans after their amazing starts on Tuesday, but they weren't, you know, they haven't been fully elite. They've had sort of inconsistent starts, so they probably like moved up to the 50s or 60s, but either way, so that's looking backwards, and now we're going to kind of look forward. And, you know, for example, one of the things I like to do is I look at differentials in ratio, so like an ERA versus expected. Sierra is the metric that, just through articles that we've had here on the site, research that I've done, that's the one that is most meaningful to me. I know Alex Fast, a pitcher, listed something for us that identified that. Our own Alex Blickle did something similar. So a lot of smart people, they're looking at Sierra first, and that's with one R, not two, like perhaps the name of one of your ex-girlfriends. But it's that, then XFIP, then, you know, FIP, of course, is, you know, fielding independent, is the one stat that you can, that actually shows a differential, the actual math on Fangraphs. So if we're looking at just ERA minus FIP, like who is the, you can say in a word, the lucky, most lucky or least lucky, the guys with the largest difference between their ERA and FIP, it's like Patrick Corbin, of course, always on the list because he's got like a 9 ERA, but like a 7 expected, right? And then like George Kirby, he's got a 2-run difference in his. If you remember, he got pretty unlucky, got blasted a couple times. Of course, he's got a couple of back-to-back starts. And then Garrett Crochet, by the way, I don't know if you've seen this or heard this, but like I think something like 90% of his earned runs have come on like 3 pitches.
Yeah, he looks like he was regressing, but he's actually, it's been more luck, bad luck than skills regression. So obviously the White Sox kind of generate their own bad luck. That's a whole nother story. But his Sierra has actually been pretty maintained in the low threes. And so we'll see what happens here the next, you know, 4 or 5 starts and where he ends up and if he can stay healthy.
And he's also one of only 8 starting pitchers, qualified starting pitchers, with a swinging strike rate over 14%. By the way, I'm sure you know this, but who's the top guy in swinging strike rate? If you want to take a guess.
If I had to take a guess, I'd probably have to go Glasnow.
It think much younger.
Much
like
younger.
Very young.
Very young. Was it Bryce Miller?
Even younger. Oh, actually, I don't know if he's younger, but it's a pitcher on the in the NL Central.
In the NL Central, just tell me, Vlad. It's late.
Jared Jones.
He's pretty good. he just nobody can touch him. We'll see if that arm stays healthy again. But it's impressive watching him pitch.
By the way, yeah, 19% swinging strike rate. I don't think I have any Jared Jones. I just never land on Jared Jones. Can't have everyone, but I'm definitely missing out on there.
I blame Domingo Herman for not having any Jared Jones. Talk about misreading the tea leaves.
Man. And then just as far as the guys with the lowest Sierras in the league, we already mentioned Ranger Suarez. He's best in baseball. He's actually got an XFIP and Sierra. They're identical there. It's at 240, and his ERA right now is at 132. So that's actually a pretty good sign as well. Other guys there, Jared Jones, Tanner Houck. My whole thing, like I liked Whitlock and Houck, but I really, really liked Whitlock. And then he got hurt, but he still was, I mean, he was pitching well, but it was like, I mean, like Tanner Houck has not skipped a beat. This has been really impressive.
Yeah, he has been dominant. He's kind of what everybody hoped Lucas Giolito was going to be when he signed there. So he's been excellent.
And so now, in the little chart that I made, it'll be up on FTN Fantasy. We're just looking at like the top 60 pitchers, breaking it out by start, just starting basically Thursday, which is the first month of first day of the month of May, and just looking at the next basically like 4.5 weeks. And most of these guys have about 5 to 6 starts. So I went in and we kind of ranked them by like a strength of schedule. And then before it actually comes out on the site, I'm going to do another reshuffle and then rank, add another layer to the strength of schedule. Cause I don't want to rank these guys just based on their strength of schedule, but a couple of guys that stand out, Cole Reagans, we mentioned him earlier. He had a dominant start on Tuesday. He had a cramp or what was it at the end of the game?
I think it was a leg cramp that took him out early, but it seems like he's okay, but something to keep an eye on.
So him and Freddie Peralta, the Brewers, he got kicked out of the game today. He was dominating, and then he hit Jose Siri in the leg after Jose Siri had hit a home run earlier in the game. And he had a 3-0 count on him, and then just beamed him in the leg, and then insanity brewed. But anyways, those two guys have really nice schedules. Reagans, he lines up for the Brewers and the Angels in Anaheim next week. Angels are one of the better hitting teams against lefties so far this season, again, very small sample, but no Mike Trout again for now. After that, he gets the A's at home. After that, he gets the Tigers at home. And then he would hopefully line up for a 2-start week at Minnesota versus San Diego. So I don't have much Reagans, but I think people that have him are going to enjoy him in the month of May.
Yeah, that looks like a fun stretch. Looking through this, the other one that really stands out to me is Framber Valdez coming off the injury at home against Seattle, at Detroit, at home against Oakland, 2-start at home against the Angels in Oakland, and then at home against Minnesota. That is juicy fruit. I don't have any Framber Valdez this year. I might regret it after this month of May, but we shall see.
And the Twins, by the way, have been, I mean, at some point these guys will get going. Byron Buxton, Max Kepler's back, Carlos Correa is back. So at some point these guys will get going, but right now they are striking out at a crazy clip against, I believe it's against righties. If I'm not mistaken, they're worst or have the highest strikeout rate in the league against, nope, it's Seattle. Seattle is striking out at a nearly 30% clip against right-handers. And we know that's so if you see like an at Seattle matchup for a good pitcher, that's going to be, especially for a righty, that's going to be a good thing. And especially that's a nice pitcher park there. The A's are up there as far as strikeouts, probably not shocking. Colorado as well. But the Twins, they have a 25% strikeout rate against righties. And then against lefties, the Twins are at like 23%, but they hit lefties a little bit better so far this year.
Well, that's because their brilliant manager is now platooning Byron Buxton. No, he's a platoon back because he needs to get all lefties in against righties. And the guy is just an absolute shit show. Excuse my French. It's so frustrating watching how he's managing that team, having some Twins on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of Twins, Bailey Ober, after his, I forgot who the star was against. It was quite destructive and it scared a lot of people. After that, it's been bananas. And I don't have the stats in front of me, but it's been an amazing ride. I think people are obviously not worried anymore about him, but Bailey Ober is going to get the White Sox next week. Then he's going to get a Seattle at Toronto to start week, followed by Cleveland in Cleveland. The only thing about Cleveland, they do not strike out very much. And they got a couple of dangerous guys, a couple of a Josh, a Jose Ramirez, Josh Naylor. These guys are dangerous. Stephen Kwan, dangerous. And then they get the Rangers. And then and things with Kansas City, who happens to be a struggling offense as well.
Yeah. It's very interesting looking at this mapped out. It's a cool exercise, Vlad. I'm glad you did it. It's there was another one that just stood out to me looking through it. It was Ranger Suarez actually looks pretty good coming up. He's got a lot of really good matchups, and then Jared Jones actually looks good too. So we'll see how these actually work out, because matchups on paper, we know in fantasy, we only can prep so much. until, you know, it actually happens, and all of a sudden you have a cake matchup and your guy gives up three innings, gives up five runs, four walks, and you just, you know, your strategy's all blown up. But you, and it's good to get ahead of it when you're planning for FAB or just lineup decisions.
And it creates an interesting conversation or strategy around what do you do when you do have a good staff and you have to make tough decisions on your pitching. Like, you probably have 12 teamers where you can't make these decisions blindly. I think people that are building setting their lineups and they're like, well, I drafted so-and-so, you know, somebody that's struggling, right? Like I drafted, you know, Carlos Drodon, he's my SP3. So I have to start him over Spencer Turnbull, who I just picked up off waivers. No, that's not how it works. You have to spend the extra time and dig into the matchup. One of the things I did this week is I did exactly that. I sat Carlos Rodon for Turnbull, and I think in another league for someone else, just because, okay, he's coming off a great start. That's fine. But that's like the things shift so much from start to start, and so much of it is opponent based. Some of it is just things out of our control. But if I'm using a process here, if I have my group of like 10 starting pitchers, and I'm looking at Rodon, his, you know, expected metrics is, you know, XFIP, ERA, everything is higher than his actual ERA. And then he's had some easy matchups where he's crushed. And then he goes into Baltimore to face the Orioles. And hey, listen, start might go completely fine, but the Orioles are like the best hitting team in the AL against lefties. And I just didn't like the matchup. It just lined up for, you know, Turnbull or other guys I wanted instead. And so I just made that decision and I went for it. Sometimes it'll backfire, sometimes it won't. But I think it's helpful for us in making these decisions. And when you look at this table, you might notice, you know, have color-coded yellow for like guys going to Houston, right? But that doesn't mean it just means like a look into, right? Like Bryce Miller's in yellow, he's going to Houston, but Houston's a good pitcher's park. Like he can crush Houston, like no problem. But it's just something we want to dig into. And these things change year to year as well. We don't want to make assumptions off the last couple of years, like, oh, you just never start your pitchers against Houston. That's, you know, that's not true. So everything changes. We got to keep digging into these situations.
Yeah, like in Colorado this year is not that scary. It's still a big ballpark, but the lineup is not very good. You and I are a lot alike when it comes to making roster decisions, start, sit. We like to use data, but at the end of the day, it's what is your gut telling you? Because there's very few times that you have, you know, your nine pitchers are just clear cut. Oh, those are easy starts based on what the data is saying. You usually have to make one or two hard decisions per week. How much, I guess my question to you is, how much do you use rankings, data? I mean, because there's so much to use. I mean, they have the player raters at FTN, player rater at Razzball, the start metrics at Baseball HQ. You know, how much do you use those based off versus your gut when you're making these lineup decisions for your SP, you know, 5, 6, 7 throughout the week?
So this year, because we've got the weekly projections that are powered by FTN data and they come from our chief data guy, Frank Brink, who's very trusted and with his model for, you know, for over a decade here. I will use that as a resource. I will use Lucas Beery and Eric Cross's as well as another resource. But I always start with my own decisions. There's obviously like the obvious one. So after Fab runs on Sunday, I'll kind of set my lineup real quick just so I don't have to scramble on Monday. And I'll think about it at first. And there'll be like a couple of spots where like, okay, well, like for example, this week I had to decide between Graham Ashcraft at San Diego, Griffin Canning two-step that included that start at Philly that you kind of knew was going to be awful, and it was. And it was Brady Singer against the Rangers. And I remember I even messaged Mager about it, Mike Mager. I was like, hey, you know, check this out. Saligra.in together. What do you think of this? And I just started looking at different data points. So I would look them up in the weekly projections afterwards. Then I would look up the stats, like maybe like past history for these players, home versus road splits. And so, you know, for the most part, I'll like go with my gut instinct first, and then I'll backtrack it. And then after we run our, you know, the model and the simulations, and that comes out on Monday, I'll use that usually as a tiebreaker for my decisions.
So you're not letting the model per se make a lineup decision for you. It's the ones you're struggling with that you're going to kind of use that as a tool to kind of take the decision out of your hand in that case. So you feel confident about that.
Yeah. Like, for example, because a lot of them are like, a lot of the decisions I feel like are made themselves, right? Because you just have your two start weeks and you're going to play most of these guys. I think like even us looking ahead at the upcoming schedule, it's going to be very rare that any of these top 60 guys, you're going to be benching them for their two starts. And Griffin Canning's actually a good example of that, because, you know, the old Scott Genstad adage of like, why even, and he's like, it's funny, he's like very militant about it. He's like, why, if you're not going to start him for two, why even play him, right? So yeah, it's a good question. It's always context dependent. Like in a 12 teamer, Griffin Canning, probably a bad, you know, you just don't do it. There's no reason to go there. Steven Matz was another interesting one, coming off a bad start. Stupid Ollie Marmol was like, oh, it was one of his best starts, even though he gave up 700 runs. And then he like lines up for like the beautiful, it was like first Detroit and someone else, both not good against lefties, blah, blah, blah. And there he goes again, you know, poop in the bed, Mr. Matz. So, yeah, it's baseball, man. It's so like unpredictable. Like, and then even, you know, even after the 40,000 runs of the simulation, like I think, what was it, our first week when it came out, like it was just like gangbusters. It was like Imanaga, Christopher Sanchez. You're like, why are these guys top three or whatever?
Sean Manea, I think, was the other one. And I was like, wow. And it nailed it right on the money. It was impressive.
Yeah. And then again, it's math, it's simulation. It can't see into the future no matter what. So like, for example, Nestor Cortez was high up. And I remember somebody on Twitter was like, oh, I'm going to bench Nestor this week. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, well, crap, he's really high up there in the model. I know Baltimore is one of the starts, but, and you know, it's not that it like the model got it wrong. It's that Baltimore got some hits on, you know, Cortez, and he didn't have a gem. It was, you know, Baltimore to begin with. So there's so many layers to it, you know, but like, you know, none of us can predict the future, but we can have as good educated guesses and good process.
Yeah, I mean, it gives us the highest probability of success. I mean, that's what we're looking for. Any margin that we can use to get a start above the field, that's what we're looking for. And, you know, nothing's guaranteed in this. Only thing we can do is give ourselves the best chance to succeed. So, and that's what this model's doing. So I'm a big fan of it. It's a new tool that I'm using this year in the toolbox, and it's been a big help. I guess a game theory question for you, Vlad, more 12 team than 15 team. At what point are you benching a starter based on matchups? Like, is it your SP 3, 4, 5? Is it based on previous, how they're pitching? Like a perfect example this week was Bryce Miller. I got a buddy, Brandon Waddell, is a great 12 team player. And he, I think, was thinking about benching Bryce Miller. And he said, then I was like, couldn't even believe that he was going to bench him, but the Braves scared him. But then he turns out he shoved against him. So where do you stand in the 12s as far as who's starting, who benching? Is it just if you have seven guys with better matchups, are you starting them? Or are you starting your horses? And where do you kind of draw the line?
I'm really planning it out. I want to have, you know, the best guys in there. But then, I mean, like, for example, this week, I got suckered myself into a Bailey Falter because I missed on my first six bids and I got him for a couple of dollars. And that's the guy that I put in there as my seventh starter in a 12 teamer because I didn't want to play. I forgot who it was. It was just somebody that, you know, like a fringe guy who didn't have a great matchup. I just didn't want to do it. I'd rather rack up some K's and get in on a guy that was getting the White Sox and A's. And so far that hasn't worked out so well. But for the most part, yeah, it's tough. I think also a big part of it has to do with, of course, how they're performing lately, how much you trust them. And then like, it's a little too early to be looking at categories, but it's something to be cognizant of. But, and one, the other thing I think is important is to check kind of your own biases. So for example, Hunter Brown, right? So the 12 teamers I have him on, he got, you know, he was lucky enough. Thankfully they skipped him for the Rocky start. And then you look at the two start on paper, you're like, okay, it doesn't look so bad. All right, cool. We're back in the Hunter Brown game. He needs, you know, he's going to start positively or regressing. And Man, that first innings, those first innings for him this season are his bugaboo, and not just that big one where he gave up 11 runs. Like, he struggles, and that's what happened again on Tuesday. Just like first two batters, boom, boom, and then Josh Naylor, 3-run bomb, and then there's your first inning. You're like, man, why did I do this to myself? And then he cleaned it up. He was good for the next few innings, and then they just let him in there too long. And so it's, you know, me, because I'm already, it's that sunk cost fallacy. I'm already invested in Hunter Brown, and I want to will him to do well, but I also need to be careful. And I think if like Hunter Brown had a, you know, at Colorado, at Cincy, or it would be like an easy sit for me, because I don't want to just take on damage on my ratios. But, you know, something like this, I'm, you know, kind of fine with.
I always wondered about this. Isn't positive regression progression? It's always an interesting wordplay.
Todd Zola knows that.
Yeah, he'll let us know. But Hunter Brown's turning into that guy that might be that hate drop that you just feel so good getting off your roster, because he just is destroying one of my teams right now. And it's man, I think it's actually a DC, so I can't even hate drop him. Which is the worst of every world. He's going to shove when he's on my bench. You know, it's a guarantee, Murphy's Law. But yeah, it's fascinating decisions, thought process. It's great to pick your brain on it, because you're one of the best 12 team players that I know, and that there is, and you're a great 15 team player as well. I think 15 team leagues, there's a lot less decisions, just because you don't have the quality of pitchers to kind of sift through. And I think we both got bit by Griffin Canning this week. We both didn't want to start him, and we both end up doing it. And, you know, the first start didn't go great. It could have been a lot worse. We'll see how the second start goes. But sometimes you just got to plug your nose and get the innings, get the strikeouts, get the opportunity at wins, because you can't start 4 or 5 middle relievers. You'll just fall too far behind in strikeouts.
And the interesting thing there, going back to that decision that I had, is I did look up. So after, when I decided I couldn't decide, you know, randomly, you know, I was talking to Mager, and then that's when I asked him. And then I looked at the FTN model, and I noticed it didn't really like Canning either, which made sense because of, you know, the Philly start. And then I looked up Singer, and then I looked up Ashcraft. And it basically, there wasn't a much of a difference, but it was still like Ashcraft, like a little bit, I think, better. It was like, you know, 70th versus, you know, 90th for Singer versus like 120th for Canning. But I was like, but Canning's got 2 starts, and like, you know, what if San Diego, Ashcraft, it's so hit or miss. It could just be like, you know, 3-run bomb, and that's that for him. And he's only got 1 shot of a win. So I'm like, it's early enough of the season, let's go for it. And we'll see. He's just, you know, at some point, like, he'll get going, you would think, but he's off. I think his velocity's down a tick. He's walking too many guys. Swinging strike rate is down. He's just, you know, he's not the same guy. Him and Reed Detmers have kind of, you know, they did the vice versa thing, like Fred Savage and Judge Reinhold.
Yeah, Canning seems very dependent on his velocity, and he's at 91, 92. He's just not as effective at that velocity, and he has really struggled because of that. And you know, I'm forever for 2024 going to be calling Graham Ashcraft my Shane Bieber, because I had to drop Bieber everywhere, and I picked Ashcraft up for him. So he's my new Shane Bieber, and he's actually been pretty good. But yeah, I made that same decision. I had Ashcraft on my bench for Canning in one of the leagues, and we'll see how it works out. Still the week in front of us, but that first start was not encouraging.
Now, if like Ashcraft was on the Padres, that would be fun, because I think that's part of the problem here, is he's on the Reds. And even I'm looking at our strength of the schedule here, and Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo are here near the bottom, just looking, you know, it's pretty much like all like yellow warning starts. Hunter Green, for example, and obviously is in both amazing pitchers. Lodolo has been like on another level. He's been just literally untouchable. I think he had 11 strikeouts on Tuesday. But Hunter Green, he gets the Orioles at home. No, thank you. Can't do that. Then he gets the Diamondbacks at home. I mean, you're starting him there, but sort of begrudgingly. Then you've got a 2-step at Arizona at the Dodgers. You're going to play that, you know, and probably could go well. Then again against the Dodgers, but at home. And then in Wrigley the week after that, to end the month of May. That's at least what it's looking like now on paper. And that's part of my issue with Cincinnati pitchers. It's one of the reasons why I could never draft Herman Marquez back in the day. I want none of that. I don't want to add complexity to my life and have to make these decisions. Do I start on? Do I not? Then they throw a gem in Coors, and it's just rough for me.
Yeah, it is tough. And then the other guy that's on the very bottom of this list is a guy I love this year and have a lot is Mackenzie Gore. And he's had a lot of tough matchups to start the year. He had Houston a couple times. I think he had Atlanta once. And you have him for Toronto, Boston, Philadelphia, Seattle, Atlanta. That's a tough stretch. So we'll see. He doesn't have any, looks like two starts in there. I think he's got the two start this week that Toronto falls in. But after that, it's a tough 3.5 weeks of matchups. And I don't know, starting him at Philadelphia is tough. I will start him at home against Seattle, and at Atlanta, that's almost an automatic bench for me other than my top three or four starters. So yeah, it's fascinating to look at, and it's a great tool, and I appreciate the work you put into that and kind of the rabbit hole you went into to kind of help us as you know, your co-host and subscribers to kind of help us move forward for the month of May.
It's going to be more than a rabbit hole, because I guess people are probably asking me to like update it, because it's going to be on the site. Well, because you know what, when I was looking at the schedule in the month of May, now starts open up these 5-game weeks. If you've noticed, the first 3-4 weeks of the season, it's been a lot of 6-7 game weeks, and then when you got the 5-game weeks, then you get more the skips and, you know, rotation moves, and it just gets a little wild. So over the next few weeks, you'll notice there'll be some teams with 5-game weeks. So like on a Monday through Thursday, they'll only get 2 games. That'll be where we sit, like, a, you know, when Christian Yelich comes back, and then we sit him for a 2-gamer because he's like at Tampa for 2, and then he hits like 4 home runs in those 2 games. That's usually what happens in those 2-game series.
But it never fails. And I guess that's the other, I guess, cautionary tale of looking this far ahead. I forget who said it, but, you know, the odds of somebody making their second start on a Sunday, I think, is pretty low. I think it's only like 30-40% based on the schedule. So there's a lot of pushbacks, a lot of roster or rotation manipulation when it comes to that, which could change an Atlanta start to a Washington start. So, you know, just keep a close eye on it, because this is just a projection where they're starting. Map it out and use this tool as a tool and not the gospel.
And very last point on this is, I don't know if you remember, I was looking at the 2-start weeks and the percentage of pitchers that in a 2-start week got 2 wins. It's only been like 1 or 2 pitchers a week. And I hadn't looked at this past week, but it's pretty much so. If you got 30 teams in the league, maybe like 1 or 2 starters are getting, so like out of 50, and you're getting one, or that's like less than 5% are getting 2 wins. So maybe we're overvaluing the whole, oh, I'm going to, you know, yes, you do have a higher chance at a win. I think the, you know, for example, the projections help you do that. So because it'll show you the, you know, like the projected win for the week, and you'll see like a 0.4 versus like a 0.7. And of course, it has a lot of things that go into that, like the matchup, the odds, the ballparks, and things like that. But it's really hard to get those 2 wins in a week.
Yeah, and not only you're probably not going to get that second win, it's also a second start with an opportunity to get your ratios blown up with the wrong pitcher. So sometimes careful what you wish for with those 2-start guys, and you start chasing them. Streaming 2-start pitchers in a 15-team league is a recipe for disaster. But, you know, based on injuries, based on ratios, based on needs, sometimes you have to do it and kind of pray and hope and find the best matchups you can.
Well, let's hope disaster takes a pause. Disaster takes a vacation, because that's what we need. We need a breather. We need a refresher. We need for guys to stop getting hurt. This is our love, our passion. We want to enjoy it. And we're only, 20% into the season, probably a lot less than that. So that'll do it for Jason Anthony. Make sure you follow him, by the way, on Twitter, at Booms62. The more people follow him, the more he'll tweet. And so please do follow him. Please subscribe and rate and review the podcast. For Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.